It has been a good set of lessons, and I appreciate you for that, because you have helped the lessons tremendously by commenting and reading for the class and helping to conduct this class. And so it's a true pleasure to be able to talk with you about these subjects, though the subjects themselves, that is, tests of our faith, are not necessarily pleasant to think about. As we talk about persecution, that's not a pleasant topic, but it's one that's essential for us to talk about and to think about, especially when we don't have those kind of persecutions that are as extreme or severe as we see Christians going through it in places in the Bible, and then certainly in other places around this world. Now, we left off talking about persecution against the church, and we talked about at the very end of class how sometimes it seems that there are going to be more persecutions against the church by those who are religious, and that perhaps does seem to be the case, in that when we teach the truth and we try to help someone come to an understanding, they resist because of their background, because of their family, because of these things that they have believed and practiced for so long. And so they become resistant to that. And they try to bring about some opposition, even to the point of insulting us or trying to defame us or put us down, do something to hurt us. But of course, even in that case, we've not yet, that I know of, suffered any physical harm from that. But we also talked about how this world does oppose us, and how there is an increase in our country of those who say they do not believe in God, and how that can also be a form of persecution. Now, I do want to clarify and say this, that as more and more of this world, and in particular our country, lose their faith in belief in God, they pass laws and they seek to establish social mores or patterns of life, behaviors that are contrary to God's will, because they have no regard for God's will. They don't regard the truth or his standard of morality and godliness. And so we find ourselves at odds with that because of their stance in immorality and our stance for righteousness. But when we speak out and when we address those issues with them and try to bring someone to an understanding for the sake of their soul and their salvation, then that can cause them to do the same as the religious person, to oppose us. I believe it's perhaps for different reasons. It might not be rooted in, well, my mom and my dad have always been members of this denomination, and now you're telling me this, that, and the other. But the one who is an unbeliever is also going to be upset when they feel the sting of conviction of their sin, when they see that we purport the reality that there is a designer, and more than that, he is God, and we can know him. There is opposition and, in fact, persecution against us because they see us as a threat to what they consider to be scientific or what they see to be modern or mature in thinking. And I think one of the things we have to be careful of, and what can do a great disservice to the cause of Christ, is that there are so many people in this world who wear the name of Christ who aren't actually Christians. We see so many who wear the name of Christ or do things in his name that are not even authorized in the scriptures. Or they go about doing those things which they think are right. And it's not actually the biblical way to go about that. And so what does that cause the world to do when they see supposed Christians doing things that are immoral or contrary to God's word?
That's not legal. That's a Christian. I don't want no part of it.
Right. If that's a Christian, I don't want to be a part of it. And what else?
The idea when people see us do things, we're not a light of the world. We're not salt of the earth. We're not following up to what Jesus commands us to be. And I think that's the reason why Jesus said, because you look warm, I'll sweep you out of the back. He wouldn't choose either cold or hot. That influence we have is, can be bad if we don't do right.
That's right. And not only if we don't do right, but if the world that purports to be Christians don't do right. It brings a black mark against Christ and against, it besmirches his name. It causes others to look down upon Christianity and to use that as ammunition, if you will, against the church. And they don't distinguish between a denomination and the Lord's church. It is all religion to many people. And so we need to be careful that while we might agree with a lot of people in this world about the evils of society, we don't agree with the means by which they try to accomplish their goal or their end. We have to be people who are letting our light shine, who are causing the cause of Christ to be glorified and actually attractive to people in this world, and show ourselves to be different and distinct than those who simply go by Christian name only. And I think that's part of what we need to talk about when we think about persecution, because as we tell the truth of the gospel, as we represent Christ and seek to change the world through the preaching of the gospel, the teaching of the gospel, and the reaching of each one, that's going to cause problems for some people. They're not going to like that sting of conviction or that which contradicts what they've done for so long. Now, our text that we left off with is in John 15. I want you to notice in John 15, here the Lord speaks of the world hating the disciples. And he says in John chapter 15, we're going to begin in verse 18. This is question number 3 of our lesson. If the world hates you, you know that it has hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you, a slave is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also. But all these things they will do to you for my name's sake, because they do not know the one who sent me. Now, before we leave this text, which we did talk about last week and answered the question, I do want to understand or present the fact that in the New Testament, a majority of the opposition that we see, the persecution, is that brought about by religious people, the Jews, who were holding on to Judaism and a perverted form of the Old Testament and trying to silence the New Testament Christians. That's the majority. But we also, a few weeks ago, studied about a couple who are persecuted or opposed by people who were not believers. Do you remember who that was? Which couple were persecuted because of their beliefs, because of who they are? Aquila and Priscilla. They were driven out of their home in Rome because they were Jews. Now, their persecution, if you will, was not because they were Christians per se, but they still had to deal with that opposition and persecution because of their nationality. So we see those kinds of things happening, certainly against Christians, but they handled it well. They handled it in the way that they should, and that is to go where they could and do exactly what they should. Now, our next question, question number 4, can you think of some examples of persecution in the Bible? Can you think of any? And don't, I hope you didn't just keep yourself to the New Testament only, but do you have some examples? James, please.
Certainly. Now, I was going to actually start off in the New Testament.
Go ahead, that's fine.
Of course, Paul, and certainly even Saul of Tarsus, as he persecuted the early church. Definitely in the Old Testament, you see Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and the fact that, you know, standing up for the truth, they were willing to be put to death in the fire furnace.
That's right. So when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were threatened with death, if they didn't bow down, what did they do? They did exactly what they should do. They were challenged in their faith. So let's not think that there was no test. Let's not think that they had no real feelings about what's going on here, but they met the challenge and they were able to overcome the challenge. Why? What equipped them? Who equipped them?
Faith in God.
Their faith in God. God, knowing who he is and what he could do. And I stress that word could, because they say essentially we could die in this situation or we could live, but either way, we're not going to do the wrong thing against our God. They met the challenge. Anyone else have an example, either old or new? Daniel. Daniel's a good example. Give us a little bit of background or what you're thinking about Daniel and his persecution.
He'll worship the Lord even though he wasn't supposed to be. Mm-hmm. That's what he's free. And
Christ, Lord.
That's right. And he is in that same generation as those three, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But that was later in his life. He was still a faithful man. And in fact, even though there was a decree against worshiping God or any other God, he still opened his windows. He did exactly what he did before, because that's what he does. He worships God in spirit and in truth. And that's essentially the principle that's being seen there. And he paid the price. How? He was thrown into the lion's den. Was that a challenge of his faith? Yes. You see, one of the things that I want us to break down or perhaps eliminate in our thinking is, if the person we see succeeds in their meeting the challenge, well, that must not have been a challenge. But let's be sure this was a challenge to the man's faith. Satan presented something here that he had to meet head on and deal with. He would have had feelings about this. He was not unemotional about that. He didn't have to, or he did have to think through what he's doing. But because we say that, does it diminish his faith? No. He is human. But that's not an out. That's not an escape. That's the reality. But he is a human being created in the image of God. He is a human being created in the image of God, given a law and an instruction that helps him to guide his life. When he meets the challenge, he accepts the challenge and he overcame it. And God is the one who saw him through it.
I wanted to read from 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Paul talks about some of his various trials here, starting with verse 24. Verse 24 read, from the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I've been in the deep. In journeys, often in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in peril in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and toil and sleepiness often, and hunger and thirst, and fasting often, and cold and nakedness, beside the other things, what comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches. You know, you start to think about all the things that Paul found himself experiencing. Mm-hmm. You know, that could certainly shake a person's faith, yeah. Especially if we find ourselves, you know, whether it be hunger or thirst or nakedness or find yourself, again, being persecuted everywhere you go. I mean, this could certainly wear on a person.
Yes, for yes. Sure. And you think about that. Though he was shaken, though his faith was tested, that's not an indication of him of any failure or any weakness. That's the reality of life under the sun before God and the involvement of Satan in a very trivial, non-spiritual way. Think about the earthquake we just had. It shook this building. That's not a problem for the building. That is, the building didn't cause it, but it withstood the test. It's not at fault for having to experience that trembling, that shaking, but it withstood. And that's the same for these individuals we talked about. And I have a couple of examples that I want to talk about, but does anyone else have an example of someone whose faith was tested and they were persecuted for their faith?
It's New Testament, I would say Jesus was a good example.
Yes.
In the Old Testament, it's hard to find anybody that got more treatment than children. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes, yes. Jesus is one who suffered great and terrible persecution because of doing the right thing. That's not, as we said, that's not an indication of any failure or detriment or deficiency on his part. That's the reality of being an individual who is called upon to make choices. He withstood every one of those, and he was perfect and sinless without any sin. Met the challenge every time. And we see time and time again, the results of that, but we also occasionally see how he did that. How did he do that? For example, in the book of John. You recall? It is written. It is written time and time again. He did that, defeated the devil, though he could have done a number of things. What other example? And Job, that was the other example that Jim wrote. Job, a wonderful example of testing and trial of faith, by Satan. Did he succeed?
Sure.
Was he perfect in that?
No.
He had his difficulties. He had his moments. His faith was shaken. And even his friends who came to him, he said, were miserable comforters. That would be a trial, wouldn't it? What about persecution, other persecutions? Kenny?
Think about Jeremiah referred to his weeping prophet.
Uh-huh.
He had like 30 years of doomsday preaching for the people, and yet they put him in prison and various things. There were many. King David suffers because of persecution against him. Saul tried to take his life so many times, and God's will that David was going to take his place, but David wouldn't take his life, even though he had the opportunity. But then his son turns against him, Absalom, and various ones. So there's so many people that suffer because of their faith trying to follow God. And David referred to as a man after God's own heart, but mm-hmm. yet he suffered many times.
Yes, he did. And in fact, you see David, a man like David, who was attacked, it seems, on every single side, from family, from those in leadership, from those of his own, not just within his own family lineage, but also then the opposition by his wife. And you know, he had good men around him at times, good people to help him at times, but he was still one who suffered persecution because of his stand for God. His brothers spoke against him, tried to discourage him. Let's don't count that as light. That still was some opposition that he had to meet and overcome. And the other example used with Jeremiah, not only did he have to preach for those 30 years, the gospel or the truth, the revelation of God, let me say, to a people, but he was told at the beginning, at the outset, they will not listen to you. Now, how discouraging is that? They're not going to listen to you, but you be faithful. Well, that's what he did. But he is the weeping prophet. He is the one of lamentations.
Yes. On Jeremiah 33, verse 1, the word of the Lord came unto Jeremiah the second time, while he was yet shut up in that torn up prison, saying, and then the Lord gives him hope. And he suffers while he's in prison, and here's the Lord speaking to him again. Like you said, he told him from the start that they're not going to listen to him.
Yeah.
But he won't tell him anyway.
That's right. And, you know, the temptation would be to say, no, I'm not going to do that. Or, okay, I'll do that for a little while, but it gets old, it gets tiring. The man was faithful. Now, he had his times of struggle. I'm not saying he did not at times bow to that pressure or struggle under that pressure. Another example would be Elijah. You know, Jezebel persecuted many of the prophets. And Elijah is one of those examples of a man who was persecuted because of his faith and because of his stance for right. And at some times we see him standing up very boldly and pointing the finger and addressing the problem and dealing with the problem. And then just the next chapter, we'll see the man struggle with that, run for his life, say, I quit. I can't do this anymore. And yet we see the Lord coming to him compassionately and giving him strength so that he can meet the need. So challenge to our faith. Let's don't consider the challenge to be a failure. Let's don't consider a weakness that we have something to give up on, but rather something to meet, something to ask for help and accept the help given to us by God through his people, his word, prayer, and the circumstance we're in. Yes, sir.
I was going to say, even Moses, you know, struggled. Certainly, the fact that, you know, Aaron, his brother, was his, I guess, mouthpiece in a sense. But, you know, I can imagine with all of these people constantly griping to you about their circumstances, that that could take a toll on you as well.
Yes. You know that? Standing for what's right and being the voice of reason that Moses was, because he was speaking for God, that would be very wearing, to have nothing but negative thoughts, negative talk, negative, negative, negative. What does that do for a person or a people?
Says, yeah,
Jim.
Wears you down.
It wears you down. It just tears everything down. It gets everyone tired. It makes everyone sorry for themselves, and and woe is me. And we either join in with them or we repel them, but we become just grumpy. And Moses struggled with that, but he met that challenge. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 11, and we're going to continue to move on. We've got to move on since this is, in fact, our last class for this section, this part of the quarter. We're going to go to Hebrews chapter 11, verse 35. What I want us to remember is that we're not alone. We're not the first. And what others have done, we can do. And even if no one else does, we can do because of God. So Hebrews chapter 11, would somebody read for us aloud so that everyone might hear verses 35 to 38 of Hebrews chapter 11. James, please.
Verse 35. Women received their dead raised to life again. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. Still others had trial of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sown in two, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskin and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains and dens and caves of the earth.
So that's just a very brief overview of a larger subject that the Hebrews writer is talking about with faithful people. And in that text, the larger text that is, we always see this by faith. This person did. And so we see obedience being coupled with belief. That is a godly life. That is an upright, righteous life. But it is still a life that has faced challenges. And even those we see as being successful, they faced and met those challenges. And these verses that James just read identify several very difficult circumstances that real people, just like you and me, had to deal with because of their faith in God. We may never see that being sawn in two, but somebody did. Somebody had to meet that challenge. And they did. And so we ought not think ourselves incapable of doing what we've been called to do. Did God test or tempt us beyond what we are able to do? No, not once. And it may be that we meet those smaller challenges like David did in the lion and the bear before we ever meet the giant. But be sure, if God has a giant out there for us to meet, we can do that. Because he knows better than we. And we need to come along in our faith to meet those giants. All right, we're going to turn over to 2 Timothy chapter 3. Any question or comment about that text or what we've talked about thus far? I'm going to read 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 12. If someone would like to read that for us aloud so we might all hear, that'd be great. We'll look at this.
Yes, and all who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus will suffer persecution.
So this doesn't require a whole lot of interpretation, does it? This is one of those that says what it means and means what it says. What does it say?
All who want to live godly lives suffer persecution.
That's right. It is very much what it says, isn't it? And it doesn't say some, it says all. Now, one of the things that I must be careful of is to understand that it doesn't say we will always suffer persecution for our faith, right? You know, this is not a life that is typified or only about persecution. This is an abundant life. It is a glorious life. It is one that we can enjoy. It is one we can rejoice in. And we can rejoice even in the difficulty. But it's not about always suffering or always being persecuted. The other thing about that is, does it say the degree of persecution in this text? No. And so it is with history. You look back and you see evidences of individuals, and I'm talking about biblical history here, you see evidences of individuals who suffered greatly, like Job, or like Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, David. But not everyone faced those same trials that those individuals did. But I also say that there were others who suffered, and we just don't have a record of them. The Lord knows them. They know them. But we don't need to for our salvation. One day, if we're faithful, we'll get to meet those brethren. But the idea is we will face opposition. We will be persecuted at times because of why? Our faith. And you know, that's something that this world doesn't understand. Sometimes they lump just any difficulty into that category of persecution or opposition or trial. And when Jesus says, take up your cross and follow me, they say, well, you know, this bad foot, that's the cross I have to bear. No, that's not what the Lord's talking about. We talk about trial, tribulation, and persecution, suffering for the sake of Christ, suffering for the cause of our faith. Is that talking about a bad foot or a toothache? No. And now, I'm not saying those aren't real sufferings or real difficulties. But what is he talking about? Trials, persecution, sufferings. That's because of our faith. We say the right thing, someone opposes us. We do the right thing, someone prevents us from doing the right thing. Someone stands in our way. Someone seeks to do us harm because of it. Yes, sir.
Going back to that scripture in 2 Timothy that we were just reading, if you continue reading a little bit further, he tells him, you, however, continue in the things you have learned and become convinced of, knowing from whom you will learn them. So that's how you overcome it, mm-hmm. by learning, continuing the things that the gospel.
Yes.
And prior to that, he says also more about that also of, you follow my teaching, conduct, purpose, faith, patience, love, perseverance. And then he goes into the persecutions and talks about that. He says, continue in the things you've learned.
There's just this charge to keep going, keep moving, go through the difficulty, go through the pain, go through the persecution, go through, because you're nothing but a pilgrim. I shouldn't say nothing but. You are a pilgrim. You are a servant. You are a child of God, who is only here for a little while. In fact, in Revelation chapter 2 and verse 10, let's look at this text. Last week, we talked about the fact that the Lord is very plain up front about the fact that his disciples would suffer. That's part of discipleship. Now let's read Revelation chapter 2 and verse 10. Would somebody like to read that for us aloud?
You're none of those things which shall... I shall suffer. Behold, the devil shall cast some of you into prison, that you may be tried. Be out in tribulation 10 days. Now, be thou faithful unto death, and I will give thee a crown of life.
They say you have your perspective set. You keep your focus where it belongs. You can go through this. And you can see the end from the beginning. You can know there's something better beyond. And he says it's limited, isn't it? He says that suffering is limited. He uses that language of 10 days, not as an actual 10 days, count them on the calendar, but instead a period of time. But the Lord has an end to that. He has a plan for that, doesn't he? And you know that phrase there, be faithful unto death. Is he talking just about a daily faithful life there in that particular verse?
Yeah, I think we're going to.
They were going to be put to death. Now that doesn't say, or that doesn't, I don't say that to mean he's saying we shouldn't be faithful every day. In fact, we should, and there are plenty of scriptures that talk to that. And I think that's involved in this. But here he is specifically talking to people who are going to be put to death because of their faith. And he says, you see the end from the beginning because I'm telling you the end from the beginning. Does that take faith? Sure. Is it going to require some of these brethren, in fact, all of these brethren, to go to their knees and pray to God for help in dealing with this persecution? I think so. I think we'd be wrong not to. But we can have our faith built by understanding, following the examples, knowing and seeing the end from the beginning, because our God can see the end. And he declares it. What is the end? I give you the crown of life. And is that crown of life worth the suffering? It is, absolutely. Remember, Jesus had to go to the cross before he could be glorified. He suffered, but he could see the end from the beginning. And he did that in part. But what I'm trying to say is there's a lot more to that, but essentially that is also our act. We follow him because he did that. He makes all of this possible. What are some of the persecutions faced by Christians in our day and age today?
Laughed at.
Slandered, insulted. We may actually lose opportunities to, you know, perhaps business opportunities because of our faith. And, you know, those opportunities could certainly be withheld.
Mm-hmm. Someone can make a condition of our job knowing that we don't do certain social activities, don't do certain behaviors, and they make that a part of our job just to test us, just to put us on the pressure and see if we'll cave. or say, well, if you're not going to do your job, then you can't have your job. That's a form of persecution. Yes, sir.
I was invited to a Bible study one night with this man at work at the old armory. And I asked him, I said, well, can you make comments or get him to study? So I went thinking that I could do some good. There was probably 30, 35 people there. And I was put down so bad that I was laughed at. Know that I was lying through my teeth. And when you got 30 to 40 people, everybody's turning and looking at you, and you know, and you trying to present the truth, it makes you feel pretty bad.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to leave early because I knew they was going to wipe over anything that I'd said in scriptures that I'd used, you know. But after about 2 hours, I figured I might as well go. I felt like I was good.
I can't imagine. It's tired. And it's wearing on you. And I've never been in that situation. Anyone else? How are we tested for persecution today? How have you heard others tested for persecution today? What about other countries? Oh, Terry. Yes, sir.
Threat of impending danger. You know, we're a society that things can happen, you know, so fast, so irrational. To you know, this is more than anything, you know, it could happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that apprehension type thing, you know, bring on stress and other things, you know, that isn't going to change. But it affects.
The threats to our physical safety can weigh on us, can't they? And there are very real threats. What's the solution to that? I'm sorry, Terry.
Got to
pray. Be ready. I mean, the end of life is a reality for all of us. We're not guaranteed tomorrow. The Lord continually, throughout his teaching, has those punctuated periods where he says, be ready, prepare yourself. You don't know. And that's also a remedy against that kind of fear and worry. Jim?
It's bad at different times we respond to the radio station, especially call in.
Mm-hmm.
All of the denominations would have things on the radio, would have things fine, everything's great. As soon as our program was over, they would come on with a disclaimer that this is not what the station believes.
That's right. An effort to discredit the truth, discredit what God's people are trying to do. Now, does persecution, seeing people being persecuted for their faith, does that have an effect on the unbeliever, on the one who is outside watching? Can it have an effect on the one who is watching or listening to the radio program?
Yes,
it can. I think a majority of people would say, well, I don't want to be that person. I don't want to have to suffer that. But aren't there those who see those things or even hear those things and say, there might be something to this? Because this individual is willing to suffer for their faith. Now, before we discount that, that's one of the evidences we talked about in our Sunday morning class as to the reality of the resurrection. All of the apostles were willing to die for their faith because they believed the truth that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, that he is alive, he is well, and he will reward them in the end. They were willing to die for their faith. And we look at that and we admire that. We're attracted to that because it is something remarkable to see. And so let's remember that while a majority of those people might be laughing or participating or saying, I sure wouldn't want to be him or her, there may very well be that one who's watching and saying, this is not right. That person is a person of faith. That's attractive because they are showing something that I don't see in this world. They are standing up. They are a person of integrity. And they think about who you are and who you've been at work or wherever you're at. And they say, they don't deserve this. But doesn't that, or can't that produce something in them that wants them to be like you? Absolutely. That's what it does for us when we look at the scriptures. And that's what our lives should do for others. And when we hear about people in other countries today, and I've heard plenty of stories about these things, and I'm sure you have too, of those who walked miles just to get a Bible and to hear the gospel preached. A man in Ethiopia who was going to hear the gospel, he heard the gospel. Then when the preachers came back, he went to go be baptized. And in the process, he told his family, I'm going to obey the gospel. And he was telling them the gospel that he knew. They were Muslim. You know what they did? They took out his eyes. They threatened him, and they took out his eyes. He still went. He made his way many miles to where the preachers were. He was baptized. I've got a picture of that man in the baptism. He was baptized, though they threatened him to take out his eyes. He is a faithful member to this day that I know. No telling how many other stories there are like that, of real men and women facing real persecution. And when we see that, that's attractive, not because of the vulgarity of the world or the pain that they inflict, nor is that attractive to say, I want to suffer like that, but to rejoice for the cause of Christ. And to say that if I ever meet that kind of circumstance, I should be willing to do the same. What are the apostles? How did they count it whenever they were arrested? How do they respond to that? They counted it all joy. They considered it a privilege to be counted worthy to suffer for the cause of Christ. And so that ought to be a part of our thinking as well. Question number 7, is there emotional and mental persecution that in some ways is as severe a trial of faith as bodily persecution? Can there be words that do harm and great harm? I believe so. Now, it might not inflict the same visible harm as physical violence. But can it cause someone to lose their faith? It can. That's harm.
I picked up Sherry the other week, and she was telling me about talking with one of her sisters, and her sister that she mentioned, I tried to talk with her, get Bible studies with her, and have talked with her. Tried to get studied with her and her husband for years. And she said, well, so-and-so said that she thinks you and I are good people, but she sure don't believe what you believe. Well, you know, it makes me want to say, well, show me what you don't believe, or mm-hmm. tell me what you don't believe, and we'll read. Yeah, well, I'll let you read.
Yeah.
You know, but it's a mental thing that plays upon Christians, especially when family members that you try to reason with that won't reason with you. Mm-hmm. And Jesus talked about that, you know. I mean, even his family, they had rejection against him.
That's right. If we go to Mark chapter 3, verse 21, Mark chapter 3, verse 21, there is exactly that here. But when his own people heard about this, they went out to lay hold of him, for they said he is out of his mind. Out of his mind. Now, compared to some things, that's not the same kind. That's not like violence. But to some individuals, that would cause them to say, I'll not speak any longer for this cause. I'll not represent this Christ any longer. If I'm going to be thought of as out of my mind, crazy. But you know, you put that where it belongs. It is an accusation. It is a threat. It is insulting. It may hurt. But we've got to see the end from the beginning. We've got to see what the Lord wants us to see. And that is that these are things put upon us by an unbelieving world. And he said, if they hated me, they'll hate you. It's because of me that they'll hate you. So he says it's reasonable. It's reasonable. You can understand how this is working. You can see it play out, and it's going to happen to you just like it happened to me. Kenny, did you have a comment for me?
In John 7, the verse 1, he talked about the last part. the Jews sought to kill him. And then you get down to verse 5, said, neither did his brother believe it. Mm-hmm. What kind of effect did Jesus have, you know, from that? Here the Jews wanted to kill him, and then his own brother. Mm-hmm. They didn't believe him. Nicodemus got more than John 3. He said, we know that thou art.
But you know, for some of us, it would cause us to question when our own family won't follow us. Because now, when I say follow us, we follow Christ. Because with us, we may second guess ourselves. We may say, well, am I really doing the right thing? But that's all the more reason to be grounded in the faith, to go back to the Word, to examine it for ourselves. And to continue to do exactly what we know we should do, that we've studied in these quiet times before the persecution comes. Because will the devil give us a reason to quit? Yeah. He's looking for that, and he's going to provide that as often as he possibly can. And you know, the time to change your mind about faith and big matters, such as the direction of your life when it comes to eternity, is not when you're in a difficult time. That's when you rely on the things you've studied, the things you know, the things you are firmly grounded in. You rely on the help of brethren who will help you. Because it's in those difficult times that the devil's going to give you an out to say, quit it. It's not worth it. You're tired. It's time to give up. But we can. Let's go to 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 23. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 23. We'll go ahead and wrap this class up with a look at 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 23. Not sure. 2 Peter. Go to 2 Peter, you find a different verse. I'll go ahead and read for context, say verse 21. For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in his steps. Who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth. Who, when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. There's our example. He is the one we follow. And if it was done to him, then it may very well be done to us. That's okay, because that just means that's a part of our evidence. It's not all the evidence. It's a part of our evidence that we're doing something right. When we suffer for the cause of Christ, and we suffer in the way that our Christ, our Lord, did suffer. Well, I thank you so much for participating in this class, and I thank you for working with me on these lessons. It's been a real encouragement to, as I said earlier, have you all participate in this class, and look forward to more studies like this with you in the future.
Good to have each one out tonight. It's been a beautiful day. Got a little bit of rain in our area. It was welcome. Just remember our scheduled service is Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. Have Bible study at 11. We will have worship. Mark will be teaching our class on Sunday morning. The books are in the foyer. You need to pick one up so you can be ready for class on Sunday morning. Our new quarter will be starting Sunday. Out of town, we have Carol Earnhardt. Jake was called in at the last minute. He had to go to work. That's why he's not with us. Let's remember Sherry. She deals with her new treatment for her cancer. Mickey Collins and Rodney Talbert and Darren Sullivan all suffering from kidney stones, and Darren also suffering with declining health. Let's remember them in our prayers. We're glad to have the people that's joined us on Zoom. Appreciate you taking time out to be with us. That means next Wednesday night we will also have new teachers, and the literature is also in the foyer for that. July Bible reading schedule is in the foyer, and the duty roster for the men is on the table, the half round table. Tonight, dear Bishop will lead our song service. William will be speaking for us, and Brent will be quoting the closing prayer.
Mark your songbooks at number 422, Jesus Saves. That'll be the song after the lesson. For the lesson, we'll sing number 406, More About Jesus. 406. More about Jesus would I know,
more of his grace to others show, more of his saving fullness see, more of his love who died for me. More about Jesus, more about Jesus, more of his saving fullness see, more of his love who died for me. More about Jesus let me learn, more of his holy will discern. Spirit of God, my teacher be, showing the things of Christ to me. More about Jesus, more about Jesus, more of his saving fullness see, more of his love who died for me. More about Jesus on his throne, riches in glory all his own, more of his kingdom sure increased, more of his coming Prince of Peace. More about Jesus, more about Jesus, more of his saving fullness see, more of his love who died for me.
Number 422, song after the lesson.
Well, about, you know, like purchasing cars and houses and so forth. When we go out and make those purchases, if we get financed, we're in debt. So we have to make that effort to pay those debts back. Also, we have to get insurance on them and so forth to be able to. Well, it's not really for us, our benefit, but it is. But mostly it's for the companies who's got those, like that, the loans on those, because it covers them. So one thing I look at that situation is the same thing like with Christ. Christ, he gave his life for us. He died on the cross for us. And by him, he made that great sacrifice for us, which no one else could do. And so we need to make sure that we make that effort and sacrifice our time, our ability, or talents, whatever all is involved, back to the Lord for what he did for us. We need to make sure we, whether it may be a teaching or cleaning or the building or just meeting, greeting people coming in and so forth. We need to make that sacrifice, you know, whether it's time or whatever it may be to serve the Lord and to give back to Him. So also in Romans 12, verse 1, that I beseech you, brethren, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your body as a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. So we need to be able to do the same thing for Him as He did for us to a certain degree, you know, and make that commitment. I know Brent Smith mentioned back in 1 Peter 2:21. For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow His steps. But we should follow His steps by doing the same thing and making that sacrifice to serve the Lord and do the best we can doing that. So if you're here tonight, not a Christian, you got that opportunity to make your life right. You got baptized into Christ. If you're a Christian that's fell away and need to repent, you got that opportunity to do so as well. And stand all the same and sell on this kind of soul.
We have heard a joyful sound. Jesus saved, Jesus saved. Spread the tidings all around. Jesus saved, Jesus saved. Bear the news to everyone. Find the sea and cross the way. Onward to the Lord's command. Jesus saved, Jesus saved. While we're on the rolling tide, Jesus saved. Jesus said, tell to sinners far and wide, Jesus said, Jesus said, sing the islands of the sea, echo back the ocean page, worship me, where you love me. Jesus saved, Jesus saved. Hear the wind, a mighty voice. Jesus saved, Jesus saved. Let the nation now rejoice. Jesus saved, Jesus saved. Shout salvation, full and free. High is filled and deep is paid. This our song of victory. Jesus saved, Jesus saved.
Certainly don't want to remind everybody about our next opportunity to be here together and to bring someone along with us Sunday morning at 10 o'clock for our Bible studies. We're going to be entering into a new class period. So make sure you pick up, if you haven't already, a book and prepare your lesson as you would for each Sunday. Also want to remember about our worship at then at 11. Certainly be here for Bible class and you won't forget about that 11. And I look forward to seeing each of you here for that and that opportunity if the Lord wills to do that. But of course, we have opportunities to serve God and His people before then. So let's make sure we're busy about our discipleship each and every day that we've been given life. Are there any other announcements that may be made by any of the men? If not, let's go to our Heavenly Father in prayer.